And finally, to another dad, Rob Sachs, the director of our program, is about to welcome his second child with his wife, Anna, of course, in just a couple of weeks. Now, besides his work with us, Rob Sachs hosts the podcast called What Would Rob Do? He's authored a book, What Would Rob Do?, which is, as the title says, an irreverent guide to surviving life's daily indignities. We told you about his book just a few weeks ago, and now he's back for a little advice on naming that baby. Here's Rob with more.
When Anna and I decided we weren't going to find out the gender of our new baby, we thought it would be a fun surprise and add some excitement to the whole birthing process, as if it needed any more. One thing we overlooked is how this decision doubled our burden of coming up with possible names. To be sure, choosing the name Rachel for our first child was an agonizing process that involved list upon list and lots of late-night bargaining. But we're very happy with our choice. And that's a good thing. It turns out that 3% of parents regret the name they gave their child, according to a 2007 survey by the website babycenter.com. To make sure we steer clear of that statistic, Anna and I have gone back to many of our old trusty resources, the first being a free one, the Social Security Administration's list of the 1,000 most popular names. This is a great place for getting a sense of all the names out there. It's also good to note that we don't have to fret about being unoriginal if our choice happens to be among the top 10, because in general, baby names are much more varied than they were in the past. When my parents were born, the top 10 list accounted for nearly half of all the names out there. These days, it's less than 10%. So, should we choose one of last year's number one names, Jacob or Emily, we don't have to worry about 20 other kids in the neighborhood having the same name. Of course, there's far more to consider than just popularity. In her many baby naming books, author Linda Rosenkrantz shares the origin and meaning of names and groups them in lists like celebrity names, ethnic names, and names that are associated with everything from hippies to cowboys. Rosenkrantz also has cautionary tips for namers such as watching out for the ones that are hard to pronounce. When I talked to her, she warned me about the perils of potential tongue twisters like Sasha Sachs.
I mean, Samantha Sachs, okay, but Sasha Sachs gets stuck in your mouth a little bit.
One Jewish tradition my parents followed was naming a child after a relative who has passed away. This explains how I got stuck with the middle name Eugene. While there's always been a part of me that's been proud to carry on the memory of my grandfather, there's also the practical side of me that knew it was best to keep that personal tidbit a secret throughout my teenage years. Fortunately for our future offspring, it's also a Sachs family tradition to just reuse the initials of relatives. The last lesson Anna and I learned from our first baby naming experience was to keep our list of potential names on lockdown. It's not that our family or friends are particularly nosy, it's just that Anna and I don't need anyone else butting in with their negative opinions. I mean, haven't I just explained this process of naming your kid is tough enough already?
Rob Sachs is the director of our program, and he is the author of the book, What Would Rob Do? An Irreverent Guide to Surviving Life's Daily Indignities, which is adapted from the podcast of the same name. And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. Don't get me started on the process for getting that name. Let's talk more tomorrow.